would like to be known as the Big Aristotle.
And I'm determined to bring a championship to Minnesota.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
Ho, ho, ho! Up high, down hard! Yeah! In your life have you seen anything like that?
I can't believe you're a golfer. I think you should be working at the snack bar.
Don't you ever touch my puck! How do you like that?
We talking about practice. Not a game, not a game, not a game. We talking about practice.
Oh, we're live. I didn't do it.
They are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
I know what you want and what you're thinking.
Good afternoon. Welcome into another edition of The Scoop here on KLGR 1490 AM, FM 95.9, and also myklgr.com. A lot to get to here today. We are going to talk to John Tuvey of fanball.com. Some fantasy football advice for you here to get your lineups ready to roll. Also, John Folkey of the Timberwolves Radio Network will join us to talk about the game last night for the Timberwolves. More on that in a second. Also, on the start for the Timberwolves here in their new look. So all of that coming up on the show here today. And why don't we get started? Also, we have the Purple Pillage podcast today as well. So all that coming up on the show here today. Why don't we get started by taking a look at our top sports headlines here for today. And taking a look at our top sports headlines for today. World Series Game 1 last night featured a dominant performance by Clayton Kershaw, and the Los Angeles Dodgers get the first win of the series. They win 3-1 in a neat and tidy 2.5 hours. Hopefully more of that coming up here the rest of the series. But Kershaw dominated the Astros. And Houston is now 0-5 all-time in the World Series after a dominant performance lifted the Dodgers in Game 1. Game 2 tonight, Justin Verlander pitching against Rich Hill. That is your pitching matchup here tonight. The Minnesota Timberwolves did not have Jimmy Butler on the courts, and it looked as though they did not show up at all, as the Timberwolves routed by the Indiana Pacers 130-107. And it sounds like the Timberwolves will not have Butler again tonight, as they are in Detroit taking on the Pistons. So we'll see if the Timberwolves can bounce back after that hapless performance against a shorthanded Pacers team that was able to win by 27. Minnesota Wilds, again, a slow start to the season. They lost last night 1-0 to Vancouver. And with Zach Parise now out for around 10 weeks after surgery, it is going to fall to several members of the Wild to pick up the slack. We'll talk about the impact of that surgery with Declan Goff tomorrow on the show. Andrew Sendejo tried to appeal his one-game suspension after a hit against Ravens wide receiver Mike Wallace. His appeal was denied, so he will serve his one-game suspension while the team is in London taking on the Cleveland Browns, a very winnable game. So we'll see if there's any impact felt in the loss of Sendejo. My guess is probably not. And Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Martavis Bryant, who is continuing to be frustrated about his role with the team, has been demoted. He will not start in the Steelers game this weekend, and it looks as though might be getting towards the end of the line for Bryant in a Steelers uniform. That is a look at our top sports headlines here for today, Wednesday, October 25th. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk fantasy football with John Tuvey. That is on the way after this.
You're listening to The Scoop.
I'm sorry, Smokey. You're over the line. That's a foul.
On KLGR, 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Need a new...
For the latest scores, play-by-play, schedules, and more, visit myklgr.com.
We're back here on The Scoop, and to get you ready to roll this week for fantasy football, we're joined once again by John Tuvey of Fanball.com. John, Vikings playing the Cleveland Browns this week in London. If you're starting a Cleveland Browns player at this point in fantasy football, your team is probably not in a good spot, but going to be very intriguing to see just how well that Vikings defense does against what has been kind of a dysfunctional Browns team.
Yeah, it's a game you're going to have to wake up early to see. They kick off at 8:30, and you probably won't miss much if you just tune in at the end and catch the final score. I think the big key is going to be no Joe Thomas and something called Stephon Drango trying to keep Everson Griffin in line. It's going to look a lot like last week's game, probably with fewer field goals from the AFC North team, and it'll be just as ugly, and hopefully a Vikings win and a safe trip back from London.
Paul Charchin had a great tweet in regards to the Joe Thomas situation. He said that the guy who's starting in his place goes from having the easiest job in football, being Joe Thomas's backup, to trying to have to contend with Everson Griffin. So it's going to be an ugly game, I think, but a lot of Vikings players that should have some good matchups. We'll talk about those in just a bit. But first, who are some of the top performers from this past week?
Well, maybe you're starting to see a changing of the guard at the quarterback position. The top four quarterbacks fantasy-wise last week were Derek Carr, Carson Wentz, Jameis Winston, and Dak Prescott. A couple guys in their second year, a couple guys that have only been around for a handful of years, and I think all four of those guys have staying power as fantasy franchise quarterbacks. So maybe we're moving from the Brady era, and with no Rodgers, it opens the door for some of these young guys. At running backs, you know, the whole week was kind of a return to form. We saw plenty of old names. You know, you had Zeke, you had LeSean McCoy, you had Todd Gurley, you had Le'Veon Bell. Aaron Jones, who I think is going to be one of the big benefactors of Aaron Rodgers' injury, is that they'll give him as much workload as he can handle. And then T.J. Yeldon, who goes from a month and a half of inactive to jumping into the lineup for an injured Leonard Fournette, and makes me wonder even more what his fantasy value would be had the Jaguars traded him with. My next this week will be involved in that offense, so he might be a nice guy to stash. You saw Amari Cooper blow up on Thursday. Tyreek Hill, the rest of the receivers were pretty quiet. Julio had a nice game. Doug Baldwin and Kenny Stills managed to salvage what was left of Jay Cutler's career, and then, you know, got a little Matt Moore as well. So maybe he's going to be the staying power guy in Miami. And then at tight end, O.J. Howard did everything the Bucs drafted him to do, and he still didn't have as many catches as Cameron Brait. So it was an interesting week all around. You're starting to see some of those young guys assert themselves, but for the most part, the guys that you paid the big money or the big draft pick to do something showed up for you this week.
It's going to be a big test of roster depth this week, as this is the biggest week of bye weeks. Green Bay, Tennessee, the Rams, the Giants, Arizona, and Jacksonville all on byes this week. And so there will be plenty of roster shuffling for those that need it. Who are some of the top targets that people should be looking out for here this week?
Well, I mentioned Matt Moore. You might need to dig down to the depths and roster guys like Matt Moore, Mitch Trubisky, Josh McCown. I hope it doesn't come to that for you. There's a little bit more life on the waiver wire at running back, especially this week with Marshawn Lynch putting his hands on an official and taking a one-game vacation because of it. DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard both split the touches last week pretty evenly. I think I would lean towards Richard in a PPR scoring format and DeAndre Washington otherwise, but they'll both get some looks. Deion Lewis continues to carve out a role in the New England backfield, and it's always risky to trust Bill Belichick to do something week to week with that backfield, but he's a guy that is probably still going to be floating around for you. And then we saw Wendell Smallwood. Didn't get a ton of touches, but I think he gets worked back into the mix in Philly as well. At wide receiver, the Redskins said Josh Doctson, when healthy, is their number one guy, and they desperately need a number one guy, and he's probably available in many leagues. So I think he's a guy you can grab, along with Martavis Bryant being demoted to the scout team. You get to say Juju Smith-Schuster's name a little bit more, and that's a fun name to say. And when the defense is focused on Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, you're going to have plenty of room to do your stuff. So I think Schuster could be a nice add as well. And then a late-breaking trade today, the Chargers send Dontrell Inman to the Bears, and the Bears are absolutely bereft of wide receivers. So to have that it happens this week, but he might actually give Mitch Trubisky somebody to throw to.
There was a pretty substantial injury this past weekend as well. Arizona Cardinals losing Carson Palmer to a left arm fracture. So his season is pretty much done. Drew Stanton now steps in at quarterback. What does that do for about the only rosterable guy on the Cardinals offense other than Adrian Peterson and Larry Fitzgerald?
Yeah, we were kind of enjoying, John Brown, Jerron Brown, J.J. Nelson. They were all kind of taking their turns as depth guys when Palmer was putting it up 40, 45 times a game. I don't think they want Drew Stanton to do that. And Fitzy's numbers, unfortunately, he gets more targets with Palmer out, I think because whoever the backup has been in the past leans on him heavily. But his yardage is, it's like barely 50, 60% of what he does with Palmer. And his touchdowns drop off as well. So Fitz goes from being a nice rejuvenation project, one more year as a fantasy stud, and to falls to a borderline two or flex type of guy. And I think Adrian Peterson now gets stuck looking at those stacked boxes that he had hoped to avoid, that he was seeing on a consistent basis in Minnesota. You'd rather let Drew Stanton beat you than you would Adrian Peterson. So I think Fitz is probably the only rosterable Cardinal, maybe Peterson, and the fantasy prospects for both are pretty bleak.
Let's take a look at the games here, and we'll start off with what could end up being a barn burner of a game tomorrow night, Miami at Baltimore. Jay Cutler ended up getting injured in that game for the Dolphins. Matt Moore came in relief. Does that do anything to impact the value of guys like Jay Ajayi, Jarvis Landry, and others on that Miami offense?
Well, Kenny Stills and Matt Moore is not a bad quarterback. You just don't go out of your way to plug him into your lineup. I don't know that he keeps all three of those guys afloat. I have a feeling that Landry is going to be the volume guy like he's been, and then we'll see if Moore matches into either Stills or Parker. I would think Parker being the more talented target of the two and probably just flat-out plays more snaps, that he's going to hold some value. And I think they lean even more on Jay Ajayi. So even though Baltimore has been pretty good against the run with the return of Brandon Williams, you saw the Vikings could get over on him last week. So I think Ajayi is in for a nice game Thursday as well.
Anybody on Baltimore's roster that is worth giving a look at in this game?
Maybe the tight end, and then that's kind of about what we've been saying about the Ravens all year, is if they've got one healthy tight end, it's a position that they throw to in that offense, and right now it's been Benjamin Watson. You haven't seen much Max Williams horning in on his action yet. They're still split in the backfield. All their receivers are banged up, so other than maybe trotting Benjamin Watson out there, hopefully you don't have to have a player in this game and you can just wait for the weekend.
Yeah, that's I've got a couple Dolphins on some of my teams, but other than that, I am sticking clear of pretty much everybody else. Looking at this weekend's Vikings in Cleveland, we talked about it a little bit at the start of the segment. We've talked in the past about this this Vikings offense. Latavius Murray had a nice day against Baltimore. With the Browns, the way that they've been so far this year, sounds like Stephon Diggs may be back for the Vikings. Is it pretty much all systems go for this Vikings offense?
Actually, Cleveland's defense has not been that bad, so it's not plug every possible Viking into the lineup that you can, because they do play a little bit of defense, but the nice thing is they aren't a threat offensively, so I think the Vikings can game plan a lot like they did last week. They can afford to have Latavius Murray soften up the defense and maybe bust off a couple of longer carries and kick some field goals and play the kind of game that was boring but got it done last week. I still like McKinnon a little bit more than Murray. I think this defense is one that you go around rather than through. I think Kyle Rudolph should have a nice game. The Browns have been pretty susceptible to tight ends. I wouldn't mind getting Diggs or Thielen in on the action, but I'm in no rush if you know, if you have any concern about Diggs and you have another option going this week and you're not, you know, hamstrung by the bye weeks and injuries, no rush to get Diggs back in. This isn't the Browns team that you would rush to get anybody in against. They do play a little bit of defense.
Looking at the rest of the weekend, maybe the most intriguing matchup from a scoring potential opportunity is Dallas at Washington. Those NFC East matchups usually end up being high scoring. Other than that, kind of some interesting matchups here and there. Who are some of your favorite starts and sits from this weekend?
Well, if you have to dig around, if you've got, like you mentioned, the six teams on the bye, you've got some injury issues. I think Andy Dalton against the Colts is an intriguing quarterback play. I think Tyrod Taylor's got a little bit of, he hasn't fired all of his weapons yet this year, and I think against Oakland he might have an opportunity at running back. You've got both of these Philadelphia backs going against San Francisco. Mentioned Smallwood earlier, and I think LeGarrette Blount is really starting to show that he can be a 15-plus carry, a game guy in that offense. But either New York Jets running back, if they're able to narrow it down to one for us, Bilal Powell, if he's healthy, Matt Forte, if Powell is out. Atlanta always struggles with pass-catching running backs. And the same thing with the Saints, which might mean, especially if Benny Cunningham's not active, that Tariq Cohen is an option. He's been able to get a lot done on very minimal touches. You would think John Fox would notice that and give the one playmaker in their offense a few more touches. But yeah.
John, great stuff. Oh, go ahead. Sorry, you kind of cut out there a little bit.
Oh, so about that is just Juju Smith-Schuster gets the Lions with that Martavius Bryant demotion, and Ted Ginn gets the Bears as well. So he came up. He's had a couple of nice games, actually, and they're finding ways to get the ball in his hands with some speed. So against a Bears defense that is suffering, I think that'll be one of the places the Saints look to.
Excellent. Great stuff again here this week, John. We'll see how things turn out with all the matchups. We're getting close to about the second half push of the season, so a lot of big matchups for fantasy football players throughout their leagues, and we'll see how things turn out when we break it all down again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, Seth.
John Tuvey of Fanball.com joining us here today to talk fantasy football once again. Did bring up a good point that the Cleveland Browns do play a pretty decent amount of defense, although they give up a lot of points due to turnovers on offense. So keep that in mind for those Vikings that you own throughout your leagues when you're setting your lineups for this week. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk to John Folkey of the Timberwolves Radio Network. And we've got the Purple Pillage podcast all coming up here on The Scoop.
You're listening to The Scoop.
You play to win the game.
On KLGR, 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Drivers like...
KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9 is radio you can depend on for sports and play-by-play.
And we are joined today by the studio host of the Timberwolves Radio Network, John Folkey. John, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely, Seth. Good to catch up.
Well, it's been an eventful start for the Timberwolves here this year. A couple of exciting wins against what we expect to be some playoff teams, the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder, and also losses to the San Antonio Spurs and most recently the Indiana Pacers. So four games in, John, just wanted to start by getting your assessment of kind of what we've seen from the Timberwolves so far.
Well, I think you've seen a little bit of everything. You know, we've seen some big fourth quarters. Jamal Crawford, you saw the value of an 18-year vet and a guy that, you know, can heat up in a hurry against Utah, scoring all 17 of his points in that final frame. And then Andrew Wiggins, the evolution continues. 27 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and the game winner against Oklahoma City. And then I think we also saw a young team, not a young team, but a group trying to figure each other out, you know, in the losses to San Antonio and, again, to the Indiana Pacers. So you kind of saw the good and the bad, and I think that's, you know, exactly what you would expect four games into a season when you're working in as many new pieces as Minnesota has been so far. You know, I thought the Utah game and the Oklahoma City game, and really for much of that San Antonio game, Minnesota played pretty solid, and obviously you see that on the defensive end, they're going to be a work in progress here. They all try to get on the same page there and get up to speed. And kind of same on the offensive end, that, you know, at different times, guys kind of took over and stepped up. But, you know, you're still waiting for that flow on the offensive end to really, you know, click for everybody and to get into a rhythm as that whole team. So kind of, you know, what we would expect four games into the season so far.
We have seen the impact that Jimmy Butler has made on the court, as that was felt with him not playing in the Pacers game yesterday. But I thought it interesting that Karl-Anthony Towns made the comments after the game that regardless of who's on the court, we still have to bring it. And I think that is going to be a big theme. And you touched on it here just a little bit ago, that they're still trying to kind of find their identity as a team, and I would expect that that'll be something that they battle with here over the first handful of games.
Yeah, and you know, you're right about Jimmy Butler and feeling that impact of him being gone. Butler impacts the game in so many ways, as we've seen through the first three that he played. I mean, scoring the basketball, distributing the basketball, his playmaking on the defensive end, what he can do just locking up guys, and his rebounding, you know, so he's all over the place. He had 5 steals against Utah. He's just been a ball hawk through those first 3 games that he played. And when you start to look back at that Indiana game, and, you know, I think that was a disappointing loss. I think, you know, everybody would feel that. I mean, to give up 130 points and 68% or 67% shooting to the Indiana Pacers, who, yes, are a good offensive team here through the first week of the season. But, you know, you think about the defensive matchup of maybe putting Jimmy on, whether it was Victor Oladipo or Darren Collison, you know, he's got the ability to stick with those guys and slow them down. I mean, both those guys had huge nights. Collison with 16 assists and 28 points for Oladipo. So you think, like, all right, if Butler was there, if he was healthy and good to go, he could have slowed one of those guys down, and maybe it disrupts that Indiana offense. But, you know, at the end of the day, in the second half, Indiana shot 77%, and they were out in transition. Minnesota's transition defense really struggled in that second half, and Indiana was able to get good looks and easy looks in transition. So, you know, one guy would have had an impact, but maybe wouldn't have had a different, wouldn't have made a you know, the difference. Minnesota as a team just has to continue to defend better in terms of the team defense. So, disappointing loss to Indiana, but back at it again tonight against Detroit.
And we'll take a bigger look at the game tonight against the Pistons in just a little bit. But I wanted to talk about the Target Center as well. We saw the home opener against the Utah Jazz, in which the Wolves won. We also have seen another home game last night against the Pacers. What has been the fan reaction to the newly renovated Digs for the Wolves?
Yeah, I think everybody's excited. Everybody enjoys it. You know, I do the pregame from our Skyway studio, which is right across from one of the main entrances. And, you know, you're watching, you know, we had over 18,000 in there, a sellout on Friday against Utah. And the flow of people getting in was great in terms of that Skyway entrance. The Target Center now has a couple of other entrances to kind of ease the flow. So, you know, that was always one thing that with the old entrances, you just saw backups, whether it was down in the ticket lobby, whether it was in the Skyway. Things really seemed to move smooth when I was up there on Friday and again last night. And then one of the things, you know, that we hear about from fans is the court. Everybody loves walking in and seeing that brand new court. And the way the seats are, you know, the seats are a dark navy blue. The trim around the court is a dark navy blue. And so it makes and causes the court itself to really just shine and pop against that dark background. And that's one of the things that as fans walk in, you know, everybody got used to the scoreboard a season ago, but your attention is just drawn straight to the court and that big logo. And the court itself is super clean, Seth. You know, there's not a lot of logos on it. There's not a lot of clutter. You know, the old court had kind of different colors inside the arc versus outside the arc. And this court is simple. It's clean. It's sharp. And fans really enjoy kind of the way everything, you know, funnels down to that court, and the court itself really seems to shine.
John, we have seen the Timberwolves debut of Jeff Teague and had a chance to see how he fits with the Timberwolves here over the first couple of games, and really played well in that win against Oklahoma City. In terms of the difference between what Teague brings to the table and what Ricky Rubio brought to the table, what sorts of things have we seen from Jeff Teague so far in terms of him finding his fit on this new Wolves team?
Well, I think it's going to be a work in progress for Teague. And, you know, as you mentioned, a good game against Oklahoma City where he had 19 points, I think 6 rebounds, 9 assists in that ball game. You saw him utilize his speed, driving to the basket, kicking out, you know, hitting some shots, finishing at the rim. And so I think in that game you saw kind of a microcosm of what Jeff Teague can bring this team and what he can do for this offense. At the same time, I think he's a guy that's still trying to find his way. And, you know, as a point guard, he's used to having the ball in his hands quite a bit and initiating the offense. And now you've got other guys in Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins who can also initiate the offense and who can handle the ball, you know, and can set things up off of pick and roll. So I think for Jeff, it's just going to be finding a rhythm, not only for himself in terms of scoring the basketball, but also in terms of, you know, driving and setting up Andrew Wiggins, setting up Karl Anthony Towns, Jimmy Butler, and on down the line, and understanding where those guys like the ball, when they like the ball, and all that kind of stuff. So I think when you look at that Oklahoma City game, that's what Teague can bring you. Through the first, you know, the other three games, I think he's just like everybody else trying to find his fit and find his rhythm. But, you know, you look at that OKC game and say, all right, we could take 19-6-9 out of our starting point guard if he can bring that.
Looking at the game tonight against the Detroit Pistons, the Pistons come in at 2-2, and they'll bring one of the more efficient rebounding centers, Andre Drummond, in the league to the matchup tonight. So it'll be interesting to see how him and Karl Anthony Towns stack up. What are some other keys for the Timberwolves tonight to try to get to 3-2 on the season?
Well, I think, you know, just real quick in regards to Andre Drummond, you know, in years past, he's been a dreadful free throw shooter. And that's been one of the, you know, advantages that, hey, if he's going to get one of those offensive rebounds and try and go back up, just foul him because he's going to more than likely miss at least one of the free throws. And so, you know, you've got an advantage there. But all offseason, he worked really hard with trainers and everybody to not only train, like, his form and, you know, his shooting motion, but also his mind at the free throw line. And so far, so good. I mean, it's a small sample size, but he's been shooting it well from the free throw line. So that might not be the best play when he gets an offensive rebound, is just to hack him and plan on him missing some free throws this time around. As far as other keys to the game, I think for Minnesota, you know, team defense is going to be huge. And just too many times last night against Indiana did we see Victor Oladipo, Darren Collison, those guys just break down the perimeter defense, drive in, kick out to the corners, or just drive straight to the basket. And so finding your rotations and, you know, as the team drives and kicks, making sure that you're closing out hard and, you know, putting Detroit's shooters under duress and not allowing that penetration to set up shots from the outside or drop-off passes. So I think defense is going to be a big, big key. And then offensively, just keep moving the basketball and making hard cuts and making sharp cuts. One of the things that on the offensive end for Minnesota really stood out to me was, you know, the team was making a lot of good passes last night, and they were playing inside and out. But Indiana did such a great job in their rotations that,
even after you swung the ball, you know, from inside out and onto the other side of the floor and you had that defense moving, Pacers defense closed out so hard that it wasn't like the Wolves were getting uncontested looks out of that ball movement. So just make sure that as you cut, cut super hard, you know, draw that defense to you. Make sure those passes are quick and crisp, so that you do catch the defense before they have an opportunity to rotate around. So hopefully, you know, last night was just kind of a blip on the radar. Get it out of the system. Get back at it here tonight. Second end of a back-to-back is always challenging, but Minnesota actually had a good record on the second end of back-to-backs last season, oddly enough. They struggled in the front end, but they had a good record on the back end of back-to-back. So maybe that'll continue this season in terms of, you know, winning the second end of a back-to-back. But heading off to Detroit, it's not a long flight, but they're breaking in a new arena in downtown Detroit, a place that, you know, the Wolves have not had an opportunity to play. So hopefully they get acclimated quickly and turn things around here before setting up a big matchup Friday against OKC.
John, I wanted to ask you about just the impact that a guy like Taj Gibson has had defensively on this Timberwolves team. He gets a chance to play alongside Karl-Anthony Towns in the starting lineup. What sort of impacts have we seen in terms of what Gibson is trying to help Towns do in terms of being better defensively?
Well, I think he's very vocal, you know, and so he's one of the quarterbacks of that defense in terms of the interior defense for Minnesota, and I think that'll help. The more you talk, the more, you know, Carl and the guys out on the perimeter kind of understand what's happening behind them, and it'll just boost the overall team defense. And the other thing, too, that Taj does, and Carl does this, too, I mean, we've seen it in years past, but Taj is very good at it, is switching off on smaller defenders and being able to, or smaller offensive players, and being able to slow them down out on the perimeter, you know, and contest and close out on three-point shots like that. And so, obviously, there's a size difference between Taj and Cat, but we saw Carl a couple of years ago against Golden State switch out, and I can't remember if it was Curry or Thompson, but he bothered him just enough to force a tough shot and help the Wolves get a victory. And we've seen Taj do that already this season against smaller guards. So it gives you some versatility. And again, I think that communication and that talking on defense that Taj does will just help everybody get better and hopefully speed up that learning curve on the defensive end.
John, this is the first time that that we've had a chance to talk since the Lynx won their fourth WNBA championship. And obviously you do the play-by-play for the Lynx. So I wanted to ask you, about where the Lynx stand after winning this latest WNBA title.
Well, I mean, obviously they're tied now with the Houston Comets for the most championships in league history, and Houston regarded as, you know, the number one, kind of the gold standard in the league. But, you know, Houston went to four finals, the first four finals of the league, and never went back. Minnesota, meanwhile, has been to six WNBA finals, and they've won four championships. And you just think about the longevity and success that they've had year in and year out. And, you know, they were using the word dynasty with regard to the Minnesota Lynx at the end of the season. And I think that's apt. I think they are the dynasty right now in the WNBA. And when you just talk about the consistency of what this team has been able to do over the last 7 years, I think they're going to go down as, you know, the best WNBA team that the league has had in the 21 years. Their dominance over 7 years and getting to the finals, winning those finals, how they've done it, you know, whether it's the league switching up the playoff format so that you're facing, you know, the best team regardless of conference, as we've seen Minnesota match up with Los Angeles for the last 2 years, winning in five games, winning on the road, all those different things. No matter what the situation, Minnesota's been able to answer the bell and come away victorious and come, you know, end the season on top. And so I think you've got to look at them right now as the best franchise and the best team in the history of the league. And the amazing thing, Seth, is that they're not done. I mean, Rebecca Brunson, Lindsey Whalen, Simone Augustus, all those players are obviously, you know, in the twilight of their career. But, boy, if you watch that final series, it certainly didn't seem like it. And you're still bringing along Sylvia Fowles and Maya Moore, who are in the prime of their career and still coming off an MVP season. So, you know, as much as we want to talk about where this team ranks and everything, the amazing thing is they're not done yet. And who knows? I mean, every year they come back and they start climbing that mountain all over again, and it seems like it ends up in the WNBA Finals with an opportunity to win another championship. And knowing how competitive this group is, you've got to imagine that their goal is to become the winningest team in WNBA history and try and get back to the finals again next season and accomplish that goal. So an incredible team, an incredible run, and I think the best part for Lynx fans is that it's not over yet.
Yeah, that's it certainly was a lot of fun to watch the Lynx get it done once again here this year. And it's great to have a couple of exciting teams in the basketball world here in the state of Minnesota. John, appreciate you joining us here today. Always great to talk Timberwolves basketball with you. And we will make sure to do it again a little bit later on this season.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Seth.
You're listening to The Scoop.
Whoa, I don't play defense.
On KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Celebrate Halloween right.
Missed today's episode of The Scoop? Find each and every episode on myklgr.com under the Sports tab.
This week's Purple Pillage podcast with Neil Roberts and Leif Bakken is brought to you by Jackpot Junction.
Jackpot Junction is celebrating its 33rd anniversary, and at this party, we're giving you the gifts. It starts on Monday, October 23rd, when we'll give away lots of cash every hour from 10 in the morning till 8 at night. But it doesn't stop there. On Tuesday, we're breaking out the champagne and cupcakes, and we keep celebrating for days with table games bonuses and slot tournaments. So celebrate with us at Jackpot Junction and win. Visit jackpotjunction.com for more information.
This is the Purple Pillage with Neil Roberts and Leif Bakken. The Pillage starts now.
And welcome to another edition of the Purple Pillage. Week 15 for us. The Vikings come up with a win over the Ravens. This one brought to you by El Azteca, authentic Mexican food on the go, located North Broadway in Minot, North Dakota. Well, Neil, a big win over the Ravens at home. Maybe not so many touchdowns, but a lot of balls in the air for kicking anyway. Kai Forbath doing his job from outside, but unfortunately not up close.
Yeah, six field goals. That's huge. Missed an extra point, so that's a head-scratcher. But huge win, Leaf. 5-2 now are the Minnesota Vikings, and one win away, hopefully, with Cleveland coming up this weekend. We'll talk more about that in a bit, but then the bye week. So if you'd have told us before the season started, hey, the Vikings are looking at 6-2, I think any Viking fan would have taken that. And the defense continues to lead the way. And most impressive again last week. And if they can continue this and stay healthy on that defensive side of the ball, by and large, I think some good things could happen, Leif, in postseason. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but I'm ahead of myself.
For sure. I mean, leading the league, doing a lot of good things. Let's talk about that, especially the defense doing a lot of good things. This week against the Ravens, alone, and they had 65 total tackles. 45 of those were solo tackles, 5 sacks, 12 tackles for a loss. We could talk all day about this defense if we wanted to.
Yeah, and the big names keep showing up. Eric Kendricks leading the way with total tackles. That's one of the better middle linebackers in the league. Anthony Barr, very, very disruptive. Everson Griffin with 2 sacks. He's now in elite company where I believe only 6 players since They begin keeping the sack stat back like in 1982, have recorded a sack in each of the first seven games, and Griffin joins that company. So kudos to Everson Griffin for that. But Zendejo with a big hit. I thought he was unfairly suspended for a game on that hit on Mike Wallace. It was a close call, but I thought he was going low enough, and I thought he was below the head on that play. But Zendejo is really making a difference out there. Harrison Smith with another solid game. We can go on and on and on. You know, no one throws Rhodes' way. So his numbers never look very big, but they just do not throw at him. He is such a great cover guy, Leaf. And, of course, that affects his tackles too then. So they're just not throwing at his receiver much. So Trey Waynes is seeing a lot of action. They throw his way constantly. He's coming along. He still gets spun around on occasion. But you know what? That Vikings defense really, I'll tell you what, they seldom even bend anymore. But for sure, bend but no break.
Let's switch over to the offensive side. A little offensive line troubles this week, Neil.
Yeah.
But the running backs and receivers getting fed the ball. Unfortunately for Keenum and his receivers, no touchdowns for them. But Latavius Murray finally kind of making a splash a little later than we expected.
Yeah, but, you know, McKinnon's filled in well in the absence of Dalvin Cook. Now Latavius Murray making his mark. And offensive line has something to do with that as well, opening up some nice holes for Murray. And Murray knowing what to do with it. So, yeah, 113 yards on the day, 18 rushes, 6.3 average. So his best game on the season by a long shot. The O-line playing well, but the announcers pointed out toward the end of that game they were down to only five healthy offensive linemen. It'll be interesting to see come practices mid and late week who's back in, who's able to go. Do they have to hit the waiver wire, hit the practice squad where we checked, I think there's only one extra guy on their practice squad. Who do you bring back in? That sort of thing. So that's something to keep an eye on as they head out, of course, in early flight as they have to travel over to London to take on Cleveland this weekend.
Before we jump to Cleveland, let's talk about our players of the week. Going back to that defense, Neil, Anthony Barr and Everson Griffin doing a fantastic job.
Yep, let's go with those, Leaf. Barr, very disruptive. And coming off a disruptive game, of course, against Green Bay, where, you know, he took Rodgers out with what we called the clean hit, ended up leaving that game with a concussion, or at least concussion symptoms, was able to come back this week. Very disruptive again. 11 total tackles, had a sack. And Everson Griffin, we talked about earlier, you know, two sacks this game. He's had at least a sack in each of the games so far, making him one of six players to do so. So it's hard to exclude him this week. So yeah, let's go with Anthony Barr and Everson Griffin for our players of the week. Yeah.
Thanks to Magic City Hoagies for making our players of the week possible, located in South Minot. Best hoagies in the state, they were voted this last year.
And I agree. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Well, let's move on and talk about the game that's going on across the big pond. Some people would say, easy one in the bag against the Browns, but the Browns just came off of a tight overtime loss to the Titans. What do you think is going to affect things there, Neil?
Well, the neat thing about this league compared to some other professional sports, I think, is its parity, Leaf. And even though the Browns are winless at this point, you've mentioned they've had a lot of very close games this year that could have went either way. So the Vikings cannot take this one for granted. I think their defense has to come out and be shut down again. And if they can keep the Browns to field goals only, might be a similar sort of ugly win like it was against Baltimore, but we'll take that. An ugly win's better than a pretty loss any day of the week. I'd be happy with another like 23-12 game or whatever, and just to go there, get that win, and get back into the bye week at 6-2 and put yourself in really good shape for that back stretch.
Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, Neil, but the week after this game is a bye, and then from that point on, it doesn't get any easier for the Vikings. Not that it's been easy up to this point, but it doesn't get any easier.
No, and 4 or 5 road games. The only home game is against the Rams, who are one of the leaders in the NFC. In the road games, Redskins, then at the Lions on Thanksgiving, followed up at Atlanta, at Carolina, not easy. Back home again for Cincy, then at Green Bay, then we finish off the season at home against the Bears. If they can be 6-2 into the bye, and kind of a goal heading in, if they go 10-6, should put you in the playoffs and pretty hot here and win some of these on the road.
Vikings taking on the Browns Sunday morning at 8:30 Central Time.
Smell bacon.
On the NFL Network as that game takes place in London. Well, that's all for this one, folks. Thanks to Fort Myers Casino and Lodge making this podcast possible. For Neil Roberts, I'm Leif Bakken. And until next time, Pillage On!
This week's edition of the Purple Pillage Podcast with Neil Roberts and Leif Bakken has been brought to you by Jackpot Junction.
You're listening to The Scoop.
Just a bit outside.
On KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Third party.
CGA. Catch The Scoop Monday through Friday from 3 to 4 p.m. on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Let's take a look at what's on deck here for tonight. Game 2 of the World Series. Houston at the LA Dodgers, 7:09. Somewhere thereabouts, the first pitch. Justin Verlander against Rich Hill, the pitching matchup for tonight. To the NBA, Denver's at Charlotte at 6 o'clock. Minnesota Timberwolves on the road against the Detroit Pistons at 6 o'clock tonight. Houston at Philadelphia at 6 o'clock, Cleveland at Brooklyn at 6:30, San Antonio at Miami at 7 o'clock, that game on ESPN, Indiana at Oklahoma City at 7 o'clock, Memphis at Dallas at 7:30, Utah's at Phoenix at 9 o'clock, Toronto at Golden State at 9:30, and Washington is at the Los Angeles Lakers at 9:30, that game is also on ESPN. NHL, just a couple of games on the schedule tonight. Buffalo is at Columbus at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Calgary at St. Louis at 8 o'clock Eastern Time as well. So that's pretty much it for the sports schedule for tonight. The NFL will have Thursday Night Football tomorrow night. Of course, as you've heard throughout the show today, the Vikings play in London on Sunday. That is a look at what's on deck here for tonight. It is once again time for us to wrap it up.
See you tomorrow
. That does it for today's show. Big thank you to John Tuvey and to John Folke for joining the show here today. A jam-packed Wednesday edition of The Scoop. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk Wild hockey with Declan Goff. Some big news to discuss in regards to Zach Parise. Also, we'll take a look at the picks for the Redwood Valley Pick'em League on tomorrow's show. So plenty coming up tomorrow as well. So make sure to tune in for that tomorrow at 3:05. If you missed any portion of today's episode, myklgr.com/thescoop is where you're going to want to go to check things out. So make sure to do that as well. Have a great rest of your afternoon. We'll be back again tomorrow at 3:05.
KLGR 1490 AM and 95.9 FM is radio you can depend on. KLGR Redwood Falls, K240 DJ Redwood Falls. Streaming online at myklgr.com and the TuneIn Radio app.